Pasuk says in this week's parasha, the Avram Zokin. Avram was old. Bo Bayomim, which is usually translated as getting on in years. The Hashem Beirach es Avraham Bakoil. And Rabbeinu Shalom blessed Avraham Bakoil with everything. Chazal and the Midrash have a problem with the language of this pasuk. Chazal and the Midrash ask, why does the pasuk say both Zokein and Bo Bayomim? What is the pasuk adding on by the fact that the pasuk is saying that Avram was Bo Bayomim, that Avram was getting on in years? If you are an old person, you are getting on in years. It's Hainahach, it's one and the same thing. It seems to be an unnecessary repetition, particularly in reference to the fact that we find this expression elsewhere as well. We find this expression in reference to Yitzchak, where the Pasuk says in reference to Yitzchak, Vayihi ki zokein Yitzchak, and it was when Yitzchak became old, and it doesn't say there, Bo Bayomim. In addition, the Midrash continues, and the Midrash says, what is the meaning of Vashem Beirach es Avram Bakoil? What was the Bakoil that Avram was blessed with? And what is the connection between the first part of the Pasuk, which says, Avraham Zokein Bo Bayomim, and the second part of the Pasuk, which says that Hashem Beirach es Avram Bakoil? What's the Hemshech here? There is a very well-known Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. In the fifth perek of Pirkei Avos, the second Mishnah says, Asara Deiris Me Adam Adnoyach, that there were 10 generations from the creation of the world until Noyach. And the Mishnah says it's important to know this. Why? Lahidia, because this informs us and this tells us Kama Erech Apayim Lefonov, how patient the Ribbono Shel Olam is. Shekol HaDeiros, the entire 10 generations from Adam HaRishon until Noach, was an ongoing progression of deterioration. And V'hayu Machisin Uboin, and they were continuously angering the Ribbono Shel Olam with their behavior, and yet it took 10 generations Ad Shehevi Aleihem Es Amabul, Es Me Amabul, until the Ribbono Shel Olam reacted. Which gives us an indication, says the Mishnah, about the patience of the Ribbono Shel Olam. The Mishnah then continues and says, Asara Deiros, there were 10 generations, Minayach V'ad Avram, from the time of the Mabul and the reconstruction of the world after the Mabul until the generation of Avram Avinu. And it's important, says the Mishnah, that we should know that as well. Why? Laidia, to inform us, Kama Erech Apayim Lefonov, how patient the Ribbono Shel Olam was. Because the 10 generations from Noach until Avram was a progression of deterioration, which culminated in a world which was totally a world of idol worship. And yet, the Ribbono Shel Olam was patient until the time of Avram, and it was only in the time of Avram that the Ribbono Shel Olam reacted in different, not in a universal manner, in the way in which he reacted Lagabe the Mabul, but in a specific manner, in the way in which he reacted Lagabe Stein V'Ameiro, V'chulei V'chulei. Says the Mishnah, L'haydiya kama erech apayim lefonav, shekol hadoiris hayu machsim ich'isin uboyim. All the generations from Noach until Avram were a progression of deterioration which angered the Ribbono Shel Olam, but he didn't react. Ad sheba Avram, until Avram Avinu came, v'kibel schar kulam. And the Mefoshim say that v'kibel schar kulam means that Avram Avinu was rewarded with what was the potential schar of every individual from the time of Adam Arishin until the time of Avram Avinu, which they did not get. It was there potentially for them. The Rebbeinu Shlom had prepared schar for them if they would have done the right thing, but because they didn't do it, they didn't get it, and instead Avram Avinu got it. Besides his own schar that he got for his own personal actions, he received the schar of all the generations that existed in the world until his time, from Adam Arishon until his lifetime. And the Mefoshim and the Mishnah say, Rabbeinu Yonah already has the problem there, as to why is it that Avraham Avinu took the schar of all the generations that there were before him. He never knew them. He never had any familiarity with them. He wasn't around at that time. Why did the Rebbeinu Shlom give him all that schar which should have gone to everybody else? In Parshas Bahar, the Torah has the parsha of Eved Ivri. Parshas Bahar in the Torah includes within it the story of the Eved Ivri. And the Pasuk says the following. In Perek Kaf Hei of Vayikra, Pasuk Mem Gimel, the Torah says, if there is an individual who is an Eved Ivri, and an Eved Ivri comes about through one of two reasons, either because an individual has a problem in financially supporting himself, and therefore finds that the only way in which he can financially support himself and his family is if he sells himself for a period of time as a slave, or alternatively, if somebody was stole and is obligated halachically to pay back an amount of money for that which he stole and doesn't have the finances available, Beis Din has the right to sell him for a period of time in order that he should acquire within this period of time the finances necessary to pay back that which he owes. In a situation where for one of these two reasons an individual has become an Eved Ivri, the Pasuk says in Perek Kaf Hei of Vayikra, in Pasuk Mem Gimel, Loi Sir De Boi Beforech, it is prohibited for the owner of the slave to subjugate the slave to hard labor. Forech means hard labor. You can use the slave to work for you, but the type of work that you give him may not be work which is defined as forech, which is translated by all the translations to mean hard labor. Three psukim later, the Torah repeats this halacha a second time. That was Pasuk Mem Gimel. In Pasuk Mem Vov, the Torah says, "Uba'acheichem b'nei Yisrael," and in reference to relationships between one Jew and another Jew, "Ish ba'achiv," one Jew in reference to another Jew, "Leisirde by beforech," do not subjugate him with hard labor. To which Chazal ask a question, and Chazal say, "What or why is there a necessity for the Torah to repeat this halacha twice?" To which Chazal answer, and Rashi quotes it there on Pasuk Mem Vov, and Chazal say that the Torah is coming to be mechadish to us something. There is a master-slave relationship in its literal sense. somebody who purchased an Eved Ivri, he has a halacha that he is not allowed to subjugate the Eved Ivri to forech, hard labor. There is another halacha. There are individuals who, by virtue of their position, control other people. They control the destiny and the actions of other people. And they are a melech or a nosi. A melech or a nosi has total control over the people. And the second pasuk is telling us that even if it's not a formal master-slave relationship, it's just a relationship of two people where one person totally controls legally the other person. Again, there is a prohibition of subjugating him to hard labor. The pasuk uses the expression forech, hard labor, but the pasuk doesn't define what hard labor is. However, Chazal do define what hard labor is in Shemois. On the pasuk of Vayavidu Mitzrayim is B'nei Yisrael Beforech, on the pasuk which says in the beginning of Sefer Shemois, in the very first chapter of Sefer Shemois in pasuk Yud Gimel, when the pasuk is describing the slavery of the Jews in Israel, in Egypt, the pasuk says that what the Egyptians did was that they subjugated Jews to a type of labor which is defined as forech, hard labor. Says Rashi, what does hard labor mean? Says Rashi, avoda kasha. Difficult labor. Hamechareches es haguf, which tires out the body. Umeshabrosoi. And it breaks a person. And then Rashi continues to quote Chazal, and Chazal tell us what is the type of work, the type of labor that it can be said about it, that it exhausts a person and it breaks him. Say Chazal, it's a Gemara in Saita and Daf Yudalef on the base. Nosnu meleches gvorim lenoshim umeleches noshim ligvorim. They made men do what is normally the occupation of a woman, and they made women do what men normally do. So it was the women who schlepped stones, it was the women who built irrigation canals, it was the women who were involved in construction, and it was the men who had to cook and who had to knit and who had to sew. That's Avedas Perach. Say Chazal, that's Avedas Parach, that's something which is hard labor, that breaks a person. That is something which exhausts a person, and that is something which breaks a person. Why does it break a person? Why does it exhaust a person? To which the explanation seems to be that any type of activity which a person is forced to do, whereby it's not going to result in any purpose, any type of activity which a person is forced into, which is totally meaningless, totally ineffective, totally without any point, is called Avodas Parach. Any person who is involved in any type of activity, in any type of work, and the work is creative, the work actually creates something. It achieves an objective, whatever it may be, gets a certain satisfaction out of the fact that he has achieved something. even if somebody is working for somebody else, and the huge profits which are going to come about through his work, through his invention, through his activity, is not going to come to him. He's going to get the same salary that he got last week and he'll get next week. It's the boss. It's the owner who's going to make the fortune out of it. Nevertheless, the individual has a certain amount of satisfaction from the fact that it's his creation. His creativity produced something. The greatest profit that a person makes out of any activity that he's involved in is the fact that it's productive. That in itself constitutes the greatest profit that a person can get. But whenever it works, and he understands that everything that he is doing is totally meaningless, there is absolutely no point to it, there is absolutely no purpose in it, that's called, say Chazal, Avedas Parach. And that was the situation in Mitzrayim. The Mitzrayim didn't want that the Jews should get any satisfaction whatsoever out of what they were doing. Everything that they were doing should be totally pointless and totally meaningless. Therefore, what the Egyptians gave the Jews to do, they made them do things which the Jews themselves understood were having no effect on improving the Egyptian economy whatsoever. They were having no effect on making Egypt a wealthier country. They were being told to do this for one reason and one reason only: to break them. Chazal say, the Pasuk says, what were the Jews asked to do? They were asked to build two cities. One was called Pisaim and one was called Ramses. Why were they called that? Say Chazal, they were called that because the names represent what it was all about. Say Chazal, that everything that was built in the city of Pisaim, it was a massive city, say Chazal. And the Jews were forced to build buildings after buildings after buildings. But Pisaim was a swamp. It was built on a swamp, say Chazal. And everything that got built within a very short period of time got swallowed up in the swamp, sank, and you had to start all over again. And that, say Chazal, is the reason why it was called Pisaim. Kol ma shenivne shom hoyoshekeya Pisaim boilai. That the Pisaim, the depths, swallowed it up. Therefore it was called Pisaim. What was Ramses? Say Chazal. La'acha shayu boinim ma'at. Every time they built just one floor, everything would fall apart because the ground wasn't solid, the ground wasn't firm. The Egyptians weren't interested at all that these cities should be built. They were interested that Jews should spend their time doing something and knowing the whole time that there's absolutely nothing productive about what they are doing. It is impossible that from a practical economic perspective there is any point in getting a bunch of women to try and dig irrigation canals. The amount of time that it will take them to do it, and this has been worked out, Google it and you will see, The amount of time that it must have taken to do it was totally inordinate to the amount of money that it cost and to the effect that it would have. And therefore it was a total waste of time. It's a total waste of time from an economic point of view to get men to do work which women are get to do. The amount of time that it will take for a man to knit one pair of gloves and the amount of time that it takes a woman to do that is something that we all know. Therefore, when the Torah comes along, and when the Torah says that if you are an Odin, you are not allowed, you are prohibited from getting your slave to do things which are Avodas Parach, what is the Torah telling us? Do not give a slave work which he knows is a total waste of time and totally non-productive. Now, l'chura, there's a tremendous kasha that you can ask here. Maybe the Odin is from... he's a Bar Musa. And that's why he's doing it. Because he's saying to himself the following. I have a slave. I could give the slave any work that I want. I could make him schlep the heaviest stones from one place to the other. That he'll have to work his skin off for me. But he's a Rachmanis. He's a guy who didn't have any parnasa. I did him a favor, I gave him a job, made him an Eved. So really, I'm a great guy, I'm a Baal Chesed. All I want to do is to make sure that this guy gets a salary for the next 6 years. So really, I wouldn't like to get him to do any work whatsoever. But I'm a Baal Musa. And I know all the Gemaras and all the Maimai Chazal, and I've heard all the Shmuzim from all the Mashgichim about what Batola does. Va'batola mevi lezeh, va'batola mevi lezeh, va'batola mevi lezeh. And therefore it is my moral responsibility, in order to protect the ruchnius of this slave, that he shouldn't find himself in a matzav of Batola, they have to give him some work. Can't just pay him a salary for doing nothing. So I'll give him the easiest work that there is. Knit gloves. And I'm a tzaddik yisayid elam. And along comes the Torah, and the Torah says, no, you're not tzaddik, you're Eivir and Anisa. You're Eivir and Anisa of Avodas Parach. What's wrong? What did he do wrong here? The Torah says that there's another pasuk in the Torah. And there's a pasuk in the Torah which says the following. It's a pasuk in Vayikra and Perek Kaf Hei, pasuk Nun Hei, that the Ribbono Shel Olam says in reference to Klal Yisrael, Avodai Hei. Klal Yisrael are my Avodim, says the Ribbono Shel Olam. Kili B'nai Yisrael. They're my slaves and I'm the Odin. Says the Gemara in Bava Metzia Daf Yud, V'loy avodim la'avodim. Jews are slaves to the Ribbono Shel Olam, they're not slaves to anybody else. The Odin has to understand something. That when he goes out and he buys an Eved Ivri, he is buying an individual who is already an Eved. He's an Eved of the Ribbono Shel Olam. He is God's personal Eved. Even an Eved Ivri. Kaidim Kol, he's an Eved of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Get that into your head, says the Torah. However, if for whatever reason it may be he has no parnasa or he's sold by Beis Din for a period of time, it's mutter for the Odin to use the Eved of the Ribbono Shel Olam. But what's the gedder of that? You're borrowing the Ribbono Shel Olam's Eved. That's the way the Torah views it. The Ribbono Shel Olam has an Eved, the Jew, and you, the Odin, are borrowing the Ribbono Shel Olam's Eved. You're borrowing the Ribbono Shel Olam's Eved for a particular function. In other words, there's a halacha which says that when you borrow something, if you go to somebody and say, do me a favor, lend me something of yours, and he agrees, and he lends it to you on a certain condition, then you're only allowed to use it for that which he lends it to you for. If you use it for something else, you are shoyel shelo midas. And a shoyel shelo midas is a gazlan. And if you're a shoyel shelo midas from Hekdesh, you're over on Eis HaMe'ila. When a person buys an Eved Ivri, he's borrowing from the Ribbono Shel Olam, the Ribbono Shel Olam's Eved. Therefore, he only has the right to use it for what the Ribbono Shel Olam wants him to use it for. And if he uses it for anything else, he's a gazlan and a moel. He's over on the Yisrael of Me'ila and he's over on the Yisrael of Gezela. And the Ribbono Shel Olam said that when you borrow my Eved, you cannot borrow him for what's called Avodas Parah. You have to borrow him in order to use him to do something productive. Otherwise, you're a shoyel shelo midas. And a shoyel shelo midas is a gazlan. There's a Gemara in Bav Metzia. And the Gemara in Bav Metzia on Daf Ayin Zayin, Omid Aleph, says the following. You need a job done in your house. So you hire somebody who's in the construction business. You hire him to do the job for you. Says the Gemara the following. If the deal that you made with him is a deal of kablonus, meaning the following. The builder says to you, I will deliver to you what you want. You will get the new floor in your house. It'll cost you $10,000. That's called kablonis. If the builder then changes his mind and decides that it's not worth his while to do the job, even if he's been paid a certain amount, he has to give it back. Yodei ala tachtona, he loses his money. He's always in the weak position. However, if the worker was hired by day, not for the job, he says, "I don't know how much this is going to cost you because I've no idea. All I know is that I need $1,000 a day. Takes me 5 days, $5,000. Takes me 10 days, $10,000." He can back out in the middle, and he doesn't lose his money. He gets paid for what he did, and that's it. What's the difference? What's the difference when you're hiring a worker to do a job, or you're hiring a worker to be paid by day? When a worker commits his time to an individual to do a job for him, it's not his time. He's an eved to the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's the Ribbono Shel Olam's time. However, he's in a pickle. He hasn't got parnasa. So he's allowed to take the Ribbono Shel Olam's time. The Ribbono Shel Olam says, okay, I'll borrow my time to you. I'll lend my time to you. Sorry. I'll lend my time to you. My apologies. Miller. I'll lend my time to you. Because you have no choice, you need it. But if all of a sudden you don't need it, because you got parnasa from somewhere else, then the Ribbono Shel Olam is not lending the time. So therefore you've got no right to use it. Which is not true by a job, because there you're not paying for the time. There it's the job. What do we see from all this? That time belongs to the Ribbono Shel Olam. We have the right to borrow it for certain things. Every human being is a synthesis. He's a synthesis of neshama, he's a synthesis of chelek lekayim imal, and the materialistic side of the person. Every individual is schizophrenic. Every Jew is schizophrenic. He's two personalities. There's the spiritual personality, and then there's the material physical personality. The spiritual personality is the Adam. The physical personality is the Eved. Of course, the individual has the right to borrow time from the Adam, from the Chelek Elokim Imal. Because he has to survive. And in order to survive, he needs recreational time, and he needs eating time, and he needs sleeping time. Of course. There's no question about that. Nobody argues on that point. However, man, as we've said many times, was sent down to this world because he has a shlichus to fulfill. And therefore, because he has a shlichus to fulfill, the Ribbono Shel Olam is constantly sending him down that which is required for his shlichus. Everything that he needs in order to be able to fulfill his shlichus, the Ribbono Shel Olam is sending it down to him constantly. You can take time out, says the Torah. If you have no choice, you need it for your parnasa, quote unquote. And parnasa doesn't mean living. Parnasa means doesn't mean living in terms of finance. Parnasa means what you need in order to live a comfortable life. But if you take more than that, you are a ganef, you are a moyel. But more than that, you lose that which the Ribbono Shel Olam sends down. You don't get that back again, because he sends down in this 10 minutes and in this 20 minutes and in this half an hour and this hour what you need for this hour. If you're not utilizing this time for him, you've missed it. Because the next hour is a new shefa that's coming down from the Ribbono Shel Olam for the next hour. It's a ma'uvis lo yochel iska, and you can't do anything about the time lost. It's gone. It's disappeared. The Gemara says in Avodah Zorah and Daf Yud, in Avodah Zorah and Daf Yud Ches, there are three stories. The Gemara tells three stories of three people who reached the worst of the worst. They reached Chol Tachtis. They got to the lowest depths. And then one single event happened which created one single Isairis, and they did one major act. And a Basco came out from heaven and said, okay, because of this, there's Zeichel Olam Haba. And on all three occasions, the Gemara says that Rebbe was standing there. Ubacha Rebbe. And Rebbe started crying and he said, Yesh Koina Eilom Bishah Achas. A person can be Koina his entire Eilom in 1 minute. To which the great Baal Musar of Leib Chasman asks, what was he crying about? Here's a guy who's a Rosh Marusha. Here's a guy who's Bishael Tachtis. And the Ribbono Shel Olam did a Merdeka Chesed with this guy. He gave him this one split second opportunity and the guy grabbed it. And because of this, he was Kain Olamoy. Rebbe should have been dancing with joy. Why was Rebbe crying? Says Rebbe Leitchik Chasman, you know why Rebbe was crying? Because Rebbe said to himself, if that's what this individual could attain in one split second, imagine he would have utilized all his life properly. What would he have attained? What a waste. Said Rebbe. That's why Rebbe was crying. What does Bo Bayomim mean? Bo Bayomim means that in an individual, comes to the next world, he comes. Where? After the age of 120, biyomim, with all the time frames that existed in his life, and can say to the Ribbono Shel Olam, I never stole anything from you. I know that I was an Eved Hashem. I know that my time was your time, and I used my time for what you wanted me to use the time for. Not everybody who is a Zaken is a Baba Yomim. You can physically reach an old age, that doesn't mean you utilize time. Baba Yomim means somebody who utilized time. Mary Verebi, the Mashgiach of Lakewood, constantly says over, in the name of Rebbe Lopion, the Rebbe used to say the following, that the Ribbono Shel Olam is continuously sending down Shefa to individuals in this world. But it doesn't actually reach the person. It hovers, as it were, above the person. And the way in which the person can actualize the Shefa, can actually bring it down physically to himself, is only through tefillah. He constantly says that over in the name of Rebbe Lopion. I saw today from one of the great Chassidish Rebbes, the Radomska, in his Sefer on Tiferes Shleima, he says an unbelievable vort, which is based on the same idea. He says the Ribbono Shel Olam sends every single Jewish neshama down into this world with a shlichus. And the shlichus is a twofold shlichus. First of all, there is a chiyuv of Talmud Torah. Each and every individual has his own chiyuv of Talmud Torah, and each and every individual has his own chalik in Torah. Everybody has what they will be machadish in Torah, and everybody has their own understanding of Torah, and that's predestined before the individual gets down into this world. This is your chalik in Torah, in limited Torah, pshutik mashmoy. But besides that, everybody has another chalik in Torah. What is your function in this world? What are you meant to be doing here? What in terms of Ratzon HaBorei is your job in this world? Everybody has his job. And Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't make a shliach without giving him, as we've said many times, the ability to fulfill his shlichus. And therefore the Ribbono Shel Olam will send down the Shefa, and that's what we daven the whole time. V'sein chelkeinu b'seir asecha. We want the Shefa, we want what we need in order to be for Malatera Secha. And the Ribbono Shel Olam sends it down. And now, says Radomska, it's there hovering around. How do you bring it down that it should actually have be inside you, that you can actually utilize it? So Rebellion says, Tefillah, says Radomska, no, something else. By utilizing the time that belongs to Ribbono Shel Olam. If a person utilizes the time to be mamale his shlichus, then what does Ribbono Shel Olam do? He allows that shefa to be incorporated within the person. And it will go easy. But what happens, says the Radomski, if he doesn't? It doesn't go back up to heaven. It stays there, hovering around. But there are certain people who utilize their time. And when they utilize their time, it doesn't only have an effect on them, but it acts as an effect on other people. Because they become a living example. They inspire other people. Every time, says the Radomska, There is a Jew who's sitting and learning. And because he's in the Beis HaMedrash, another guy will walk into the Beis HaMedrash. He's being misaken in the world. And every time there's a Jew who's being an Eved Hashem, he's doing what the Ribbono Shel'Olam wants. If he comes to davening on time, therefore one other guy will come to davening on time. He's not only doing what his shlichus is klapei himself, he's changing the world. Says the Radomsky, if you're sitting and learning, and there was a guy who never learnt a word for the last half a year, he never stepped foot in the Beis HaMedrash, but because you're in the Beis HaMedrash, he now walks in and sits down and starts learning. Says the Radomska, what happened to all the ashpoes that came down in the last 6 months for that guy? But they never got grabbed by the guys, so they're hovering around. And now when he sits down to learn, he's getting new ashpoes from today. But what about all the old ashpoes? Where did that go to? Says the Radomska, that goes to you. Because you're the guy who brought him into the Beis HaMedrash. And that's true of davening, and that's true of learning, and that's true of chesed, and that's true of everything. Anybody who gets inspired by you, if you are mesaken the kelim, then all that shefa which is wandering around comes down to you. Says the Radomska, that's the pshat in the Mishnah. The Mishnah says there were 10 days from Adam Rishon until Noach, and then there were 10 days from Noach until Avraham Avinu. And the Ribbono Shel'Olam was continuously sending down Shefa. But it never actually got to the people because they were a show, but it was there floating around. Shebo Avraham made a revolution in the world. Avraham changed the world. All that Shefa went to him. Vashem Beirach es Avraham Bakoil. With all that Shefa. Every single moment, every single second, every single minute, every single hour, every single day, every single week, every single month, every single year, the Ribbono Shel'Olam is sending down Shefa. If you miss it, it does not come back to you. You will get the new Shefa, the old Shefa you won't get. It's some Uvas Shaleach HaVizkot. Every bittel zman is an act of Gneiva. You are stealing from the Ribbono Shel'Olam. And every Maiseh Rotz Kiyum Rotzon Hashem that a person does, which by ripple effect will influence somebody else, allows you to grab his Shefa that he didn't utilize. And there's a Melodica lesson in that, which is a very, very practical lesson. And apropos of all this, Rabbi Lopian asked me to make a public statement in his name. He says that he killed himself in order to raise money, in order to provide the Bokhrim in the yeshiva with certain activities, including a gym and including a computer room, in order to allow the possibility of relaxation within the Dalai Lama's Shul Halacha and not having to go elsewhere. But the whole point of the exercise was that this should be borrowing mitas from the Ribbono Shel'Olam. The Ribbono Shel'Olam understands that if a guy is learning in Leiv Aryeh, then he needs a certain amount of relaxation, and therefore he is allowed to borrow the Ribbono Shel'Olam's time for that relaxation. But there is a limit to that. But if it becomes uncontrollable, if it becomes a situation whereby one is over-borrowing from the Ribbono Shel'Olam, something which the Ribbono Shel'Olam determines is not a necessity, it's just a pure act of bittel zman for absolutely no reason whatsoever, then we are gazlon, which means that he raised money in order to steal. And he's not interested in having that responsibility. Therefore, as of now, this minute, Rabbi Lopian has decided that the computer room will be open at night. Be there a game, be there not a game, irrelevant, until 12:30. The computer room will close at 12:30 every night, irrespective of what happens after 12:30. Plus the fact that if it is a day in the year when Shvat is perspiring, and there are some people whose intellectual and emotional maturity level is such that they cannot live without watching Shvat is perspiring, then they may do, not that they may do so, and they decide to do so, using whatever vehicle they believe is the right thing to do, that's fine. He will deal with that in his way. But if those individuals are not at Shacharis the following morning, then the repercussions are going to be very, very severe. He is in a very bad way.